It's cultivate our motivation. So begin by recalling the kindness of those who taught you when you were young and took care of you when you were young. And think of the things that they did to keep you alive and educate you and so on. And let a feeling of gratitude arise in your mind. Of strangers who grow the food, make the clothes, build the buildings, give you health care, education, and so on, and how much we depend on all these people for everything we know and everything we have. Also, the kindness of the people who have harmed you or interfered with your well-being, and think of how much you have grown through going through those experiences, how you're a different, stronger person now. And again, appreciate what that person did to help you grow. Consider how all those people are stuck in cyclic existence, getting born and again and again under the power of ignorance and polluted karma, and how they want happiness, but they're under the influence of afflictions and karma, and so just like us, they have many problems and disappointments. Wish that they have happiness, not only the happiness of cyclic existence, but the happiness of true freedom, the happiness of liberation and full awakening. Wouldn't that be nice if they had that kind of joy and we also had that? Stable. It's not changing with the wind. Based on that compassion, that wish to be of benefit, service to others, then generate the aspiration to attain full awakening, so that we'll have the wisdom, compassion, skillful means, and power to be able to do that, so that we aren't limited by our own lack of knowledge, our own faults. But from our side, where we are prepared and have the ability to be of great benefit, and so aspire to attain that state of awakening for that purpose. Doing here at the center tonight is we're creating the causes for that. So feel glad that you have that noble motivation and the situation to be able to create the causes to attain it. Was there some change in your mind as you did that? This is, the purpose of these kind of checking or analytic meditations is that by following, the series of steps and really thinking deeply, it affects our mind and how we think about things. And so that is part. part of mind training. Yeah? So spiritual practice isn't just about praying to Buddha or whoever and asking for their blessings. It's about actively taking steps to change how we look at the world and to bring our mind more in line with reality and with what is of benefit. And the nice thing is, if we do these exercises, then like anything, you know, that we, where we create the causes, then the results will come. And so, you know, creating all the causes necessary for full awakening is going to take us a while, okay? But the thing is, as long as we know we're going in a good direction, it doesn't matter how long it takes, and we can just be content to create the causes, knowing that when, you know, the causes and conditions accumulate, then the different stages of mental transformation will occur. And so in that way we can be satisfied with our life and feel that our life is meaningful and that we're making a contribution to the welfare of other living beings. And I think in our day and age, you know, people are very much searching for meaning. Because in the post-war time, post-World War II time, you know, there was economic growth, and so the physical suffering is not as great, but I think people have a lot of mental suffering. Yeah. How many of you have more mental suffering than physical suffering? So, you know, if we can learn ways to manage and subdue the mental suffering, then we're going to have a lot more energy to do good in the world, as well as a lot more happiness. And so the real key to that is overcoming the self-centered attitude. So that's, I talked a bit last night about the self-centered attitude. That's the one that says, I'm the center of the universe, and everything should go the way I want it, and everybody should like me, and everybody should agree with me, and my suffering hurts more than theirs, and my happiness is more important than theirs. So that whole attitude that just puts ourselves first, with actually no good reason, except that I'm me. And the problem why that's not a good reason is everybody says, well, I'm me. So what makes one me more important? And especially when it's one me here, and all me's minus one here, and we believe in democracy, so who's going to be more important? One person, who just happens to be me, or everybody else? Yeah. And so here's why it's important to purify our minds so that we can learn how to be of the greatest benefit to others. So we can benefit them now, but you know, this doesn't mean we need to go running around managing other people's lives in order to benefit them. That often is interfering with their happiness, not helping. Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the eight verses, but we're also going to weave caring for the environment in with it. Because one of the reasons why, you know, when we look for our lack of care about the environment, One of the reasons is ignorance. Yeah. And one of the reasons is self-centeredness. Yeah. There's things to do to take care of the environment, but it just takes more effort than I want to put out. And other people should do their part. Why should I just put forth effort if others don't do anything? Yeah. So I just will let it go too. Okay? This kind of self-centered attitude. And so then we just say, okay, well, you know, just let it be. So a good example is I was in Mexico many years ago, and two people who were both professors of environmental science, they were attending the talks I was giving, and we had lunch together one day, and they were telling me how their children came home from school learning about how to take care of the environment and recycle and reuse and, you know, not consume so much. And the kids, small kids, came home, Mommy and Daddy, you know, let's do this. This is so good for the environment. And the parents, you know, their first reaction was, oh, that, you know, that means changing things, how we're doing stuff. And then they're both professors of environmental science, who've been writing papers about degradation of the environment. And they didn't even realize their own attitude towards making a personal change in their household until their kids started bringing it up. Yeah? Isn't that interesting how, you know, you can be so involved in a field and want to improve the environment when you're at work, and when you come home, it doesn't even enter your mind. Yeah? So they were telling me about how shocked they were to discover this about themselves. And then I think the self-centered attitude, that one, you know, like you just try and tell people, you know, don't just get in the car and go somewhere, but have a whole list of errands and go do your errands in order, you know, all at one time, so that you're not going in and out every single day driving the car. Carpool when you can. Ride your bike. Yeah, try telling somebody in America to ride their bike. A few people do, but nothing like here. Yeah? And the mind says, you know, but if I carpool, then I have to leave a little bit earlier to meet the person I'm driving with. And I like my freedom to just drive whenever I want to and go whenever I want to without having to meet somebody else. You know, or it rains, I don't want to be on a bike when it rains. And when I run out of something, I want to be able to go get it immediately. You know, I don't want to have to the burden of having to think ahead of what I might need all week and get it all, you know, all at one time. I'm lazy. I just want to, you know, go out and get it when I need it. Yeah, just this kind of laziness. Yeah, do you have it? We all have it, you know. Oh yeah, recycling is really good, but, you know, to bring that up at the office, my boss may not like it, you know, and then I may get criticized because it's inconvenient, because we have to put the recycled paper, you know, 2 feet away from our desk instead of in the trash. And we have to take the time to separate it, you know. And people, you know, people just don't want to. So this is an effect of our own self-centeredness. You know? Instead of, you know, thinking and really seeing how we are on planet Earth like one interdependent organism, and what we each do influences the whole and influences all the future generations of people who are going to come, including perhaps our future lives, if we're fortunate to be born as a human being on this planet. So if, you know, in a future life you're complaining about, you know, all those people in the 21st century who had information about climate change and didn't do anything because they were so lazy, then realize that might be have been your who you are right now. Who's doing that? And your future life is going to complain about who you are right now. Yeah. So, you know, if we really see ourselves as one organism, so to speak, then we can really function together and go ahead together, you know, instead of waiting. You know, well, our country is only going to cut back on carbon, you know, emissions if everybody else does. Yeah, and dear Donnie doesn't want to, so why should we? Yeah, he pulled out of the Paris climate change. So why should we exert ourselves? Yeah. Why? Well, it's for our own benefit, isn't it? If you live in a polluted environment, your own health goes down. When I first went to India, like 40 years ago, the air was pretty clear, and especially when I lived in Dharamsala, which is in the mountains, you know, the air in the morning was so cool and pure and crisp. And then each year as I go back, you know, I would see this layer of pollution kind of start in the valley. And you could look down and see kind of like the top of the layer of pollution. And the last time I went, I couldn't see the top of the layer of the pollution because it was already above where I was. Yeah. And so, you know, then it affects our lungs, it affects children, it affects the plants and the animals, and, you know. So I think it's good that we all do what we can, no matter if other people don't. So it's very interesting in the U.S. right now, the state of California on the West Coast is very much interested in reducing carbon emissions and being kind to the environment. And they're setting up laws within their own state that are different than the federal laws, because Trump has been removing a lot of the federal restrictions on carbon emissions and so on, because he says it's better for business if you don't have those restrictions. But California, the state, the people, they care about it, and they're making new rules, and Trump's really mad. Yeah, and he's taking the whole state to court. Yeah.
On that point?
Yeah. Or is it maybe the California is taking the federal government to court, but there's a court case about this. Yeah. But I think that's so cool, you know. And the governor of California, he even went to China to talk with the Chinese officials about reducing, you know, pollutants in the environment. even though the president of the country won't do that, but the governor of California will. So, yeah, it's quite interesting now. There's several different policies, not only on the environment, but also on immigration, where the states don't agree with the federal government. Yeah?
Yeah, so we are very interested in specific this topic here, and I had like a very special experience. I was during this 3 years retreat, and I was doing my own shopping list, mm-hmm. and mostly I would have some organic food, and like mostly it would be from the same company, like very good. And then sometimes maybe it was someone else doing the shopping or something, and being in this environment where you're completely isolated and you don't think so much about food, you actually don't care so much about it, just that it's nutritional. So then there was someone else doing the shopping, I was just kind of blown away by the marketing of the things, like, and I think that is like where the Buddhism and also like where Buddha Sakyamuni, he was like really kind of like with the rice seedling sutra, and like where does it start? And we buy so much with the emotions, like the packaging and all this, and like the old time of living where you had your farm, you were doing all your mind is your kind of consuming is like more peaceful, but now we buy so much with our emotions, and that's why it goes so close to us. If somebody says that you shouldn't buy this because that's bad for the environment, and so much politics, so I think like whether the power of Buddhism is really to look at like the start of the chain, to really see like look at our patterns, and I think maybe so it's not just politics, but like walk your talk.
Very much.
But it was really striking to kind of just like very neutral food, and then suddenly just like kind of seeing this like eerie kind of big letters and colors and like all this, like it was like very disturbing.
Yeah.
So, and that's our reality.
Yeah, when you're in retreat, then those kind of, you become quite sensitive to all of that kind of stuff, and you begin to see how much it influences you. And especially advertising, you know, because before advertising was just to let people know if they had a need where they could go to get it. Now the advertising is to create the need. Yeah. So, you know, having our internal intelligence and being able to monitor what we expose ourselves to, what we allow ourselves to be influenced by, especially in terms of consumption. This relates very much to Buddhism, because we're told that, you know, unless we use certain toothpaste and certain laundry detergent and, you know, certain shampoo, then nobody's going to love us. Yeah, and that's what the commercials tell us. Yeah, drive the new car. And yeah, so it's this whole thing of attachment, more and better, more and better, and to really rein in our attachment and make it, you know, what is actually essential, instead of what do I want and how can I keep up with the Larsons, you know, and have exactly what they have, and because my social status depends on having certain material things.
Mm-hmm. I think in Denmark, I don't know in another country, but in Denmark we have a big problem with the how much food the shop put in garbage every day. Yeah. Many animals die, and all you also think about the vegetarian, also a lot of animals die when you grown this, so you can go in every shop here in the evening and you can find so much food, and this is Yeah.
So much waste. Yeah, I think all the developed countries are like that. Yeah. I don't know how much poverty you have here, but in my country, you know, they throw the food in the dumpster and then people go pull the food out of the dumpster.
Yeah. You can do also here. If they're not closed, you can go and take when the shop closed. Mm. And I think it's better not just keep it taken out.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing wrong with the food. You can buy one bag of apple, maybe 10 apples, and one is old, and another 9. No problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, you can see it's really a thing of our mind that wants the best, yeah, and won't settle for something we don't consider the best. Yeah. And so to really look at that mind, and I think also especially about clothes, household furnishings, cars, yeah, and how we, and another big thing is digital devices. Yeah, we want the latest computer, the latest iPad, the latest smartphone. Yeah, everybody gets so excited when Apple releases a new phone and the line is out the door and around the corner to get the new phone. Even though we have the one, you know, you have the one from last year. But all your friends are getting the new one. The new one has special features on it that you probably won't use. Or even if you use them, not so often. So there's so much waste, yeah, in that kind of area. And that involves, you know, because you have different chemicals and so on that are involved in making these things. And then if we throw them in the garbage, the chemicals get released. You know? And very not so smart on our smartphones can be pretty dumb. Okay? But it's so interesting to watch our own mind. And then, you know, and then especially you hear a talk like this and you think, okay, I'm going to restrain, I'm not going to, you know, be so emotional about the advertising. I'm just going to get what I, you know, really need and not waste anything. And I have a very strong intention. I just heard this talk. Yeah. And then tomorrow, then you see one thing that you don't really need. It sure is nice. And it would be really nice to have that. And it's only one small thing. It's only one item. And I'm only one person. And okay, it's overconsumption, but there's 7 billion human beings on this planet. And me abstaining from buying this one is not going to solve the climate crisis. Yeah, and it's already made, so this stuff is already extracted from the ground. So my not buying it doesn't really help the environment at all. And so I'll get it, and, you know, the other people here at the talk, they aren't with me. They don't know I'm getting it. And it's, you know, like, really not a big deal.
And the funny thing, I think, is that sometimes these thrills, they maybe last a day or maybe a week or two, and then later, then you just kind of forgot about it, and then some new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But especially to watch the way our own mind works, how we rationalize things, how we justify. Yeah. Very interesting. The self-centered mind is extremely clever.
Manipulating.
Hmm?
Manipulating.
Yes. Very much so. Okay. Okay, verse 3. In all actions, I will examine my mind, and the moment a disturbing attitude arises, endangering myself and others, I will firmly confront and avert it. So this can apply very directly to what we're talking about. Yeah? So when the urge comes to overconsume, or we don't feel like recycling, it's too much effort, or, you know, all these ways our mind rationalizes. So it says, in all actions I will examine my mind, and the moment a disturbing attitude arises. So that disturbing attitude could be, well, I'm only one person, like I said before. It's not going to solve the whole problem if I just buy this one thing. Yeah, so I can. Or, oh, especially if you have children. Yeah, my children want these toys, and their friends have these toys. And how can I not get these toys and for my own children when their friends have them, you know? Then my children feel left out, they feel ashamed, they feel deprived. Yeah, I'm really not a very good parent. And if all these other parents get these digital advices and clothes and toys and so on for their children, I should really do the same for my children. Otherwise, you know, my kids will really have a very negative attitude towards our family. Okay? Sounds very reasonable, doesn't it? Yeah? That's one of these disturbing attitudes. Okay? So the moment a disturbing attitude arises, endangering myself and others, I will firmly confront and avert it. Okay, so whenever one of these tendencies occur, yeah, to notice it and not rationalize it or justify it, but just say, okay, you know, this is my self-centered thought, this is my greed, my attachment, this is my laziness, yeah, and this kind of behavior endangers myself and others because it's contributing to the pollution in the environment and climate change. So I need to really look out for this kind of attitude in my mind and not let it control my behavior, but rather to have my own sense of ethical conduct when it comes to consumption and when it comes to caring for the environment, and live according to my own ethical, environmental ethical standards. Yeah.
I have had some issues regarding choices of food, because I'm a vegetarian, and sometimes I miss the softer foods like fruits and avocados and so on. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when I shop, I look at the avocado and I know how much water has been used to grow the avocado and how much it has been transported to get to my hand, mm-hmm. and I feel a sudden guilt. Mm. On the other hand, I feel I don't miss meats at all, but mm-hmm. it's the last kind of the taste of something soft and easy to consume, mm-hmm. because Danish vegetables are mostly hard, like carrots and mm-hmm. celeries and so on. So I have been thinking about the issue yeah. for quite a while, uh-huh. and eventually I think I got to the point where I said to myself, if I don't buy the avocado, I will not be satisfied, and the person who has grown it will miss on his economy. So I bought the avocado, but I had the talk, and I made a choice, and I don't buy them as often anymore. But it's interesting how you can try your best to change a way of behaving, mm-hmm. and still end up going back somewhat.
Yeah. And it's hard, and one way to deal with that from a Buddhist sense is, okay, I know that it's, you know, it has some carbon effect to transport it, and lots of water was used to grow it, and I'm consuming it, but now I have an obligation to use my life for the benefit of others. Yeah? So I'm eating this food because, I mean, it would be impossible to live a totally environmentally perfect life. You know, it would be pretty impossible. But, you know, if we say, okay, I'm doing the best I can, and, you know, I take an avocado once in a while, but by it nourishing my body, may I really then work for the benefit of others and not just eat the avocado because I like it, but to strengthen my body and then use my energy to serve other living beings. Yeah? And I think if we think that way, then, you know, it's okay. I think, because for example, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, he says that he's a part-time vegetarian. He wanted to be a full-time vegetarian, but his doctor told him he had to eat meat. And so he eats it from time to time. But he always, you know, says a mantra and generates compassion for the animal that gave its life. And, you know, and he generates that bodhicitta motivation to be able to benefit all sentient beings by keeping his body alive in that way. Yeah. But meat, in terms of harming the environment, is much more harmful than strawberries and avocados and so forth. Yeah, because of the methane gas that the meat, you know, puts into the environment. Yeah. It's a big, you know, you don't realize it, but, you know, meat consumption is really bad for the environment. And yet some people, you know, they want their meat, they don't want to give it up. Mm-hmm. And it's really not that hard to give up. Yeah, once you do it, it's really not difficult. Yeah. I gave up meat way before I became a Buddhist. Not way before, but a few years before. And I was here traveling in Europe and in Germany. And you know, they have these blood sausages in Germany. So I had never eaten one before. It was just like, you know, some kind of meat. And so we got it, and we were camping, and took it back, and cut it open.
You didn't know?
And that did it for me. It's like, whoa, I'm eating somebody's body, you know, and their blood. And I mean, that's what I'm eating for dinner. And it was right in my face, and that kind of did it. Yeah, that did it. And, you know, I still ate a little bit of meat after that, but not very much, and then I soon let go of that little bit. And my family was freaking out when I went back to the States. My mother said, you come for dinner and there's nothing we can make. Actually, Mom, you know, there's a lot you can make. So, you know, that verse there about, you know, monitoring our mind. And so, you know, we can do it in the context of how we're taking care of the environment, you know, and watch the mind when, you know, it's like, I feel like going out for a drive today. You know, or I feel like driving the car. I don't want to take public transport. To watch that mind and say, okay, you know, that's my own greed running the show there. And I don't want to just give in to my greed and my laziness and my lack of care for other living beings. So I'm going to do a little bit of internal discipline here, you know, and refrain from doing that action. So it, you know, it applies to environmental issues, but it applies to all sorts of things in our life too. Yeah? So especially if we see ourselves getting angry, to be able to say, oh, that's a disturbing attitude arising in my mind. It's going to harm others because I'm going to dump my anger on them. And it's going to harm me because whenever I act out of anger, I'm creating destructive karma and putting the seeds of destructive karma on my own mind stream, and that's going to ripen in my own misery in the future. And so seeing that, yeah, then I will refrain from, you know, getting angry and, you know, making a critical comment or yelling and screaming or blaming somebody or whatever it is. Yeah. So really learning to watch the mind and know the disadvantages of the different afflictions and know them well so that when the affliction starts to come up, we can say, whoa, you know, I need to be careful here.
I think like this is kind of similar to having an addiction, these things, and I mm-hmm. think to see what's happening and think about the consequences is very, very good. Mm-hmm. But anyone that has an addiction, also we have this like kind of feeling. Can you say something just a little bit about how to work with, because one part is kind of, it's almost, I would say, intellectual mm-hmm. kind of teaching us, don't do it kind mm-hmm. of way, but you still have this kind of feeling. Can you say how to kind of relate with that? Because it's still there, this kind of urge to maybe smoke cigarettes or like...
Yeah,
maybe,
or whatever it is. His Holiness says that becoming more and more familiar with the reasoning part of it, you know, then stops being intellectual and starts being what we believe. Yeah? And then that, you know, it affects the emotional level too. Okay? Because the emotions, we think emotions just come out of nowhere. And in any kind of situation, we feel like, you know, we don't really have a choice about what emotion we feel. You know, anybody in their right mind would feel offended if so-and-so said this to them, you know. Anybody in their right mind would feel like they wanted this. And we feel like, you know, our emotions just come out of nowhere without any reason, and that everybody would or should feel the same way. But when we examine, yeah, behind any emotion, there's a lot of thought. Yeah, and it's usually quite ignorant, illogical thought that we think is quite logical. Yeah, so this person, you know, just criticized me in front of my boss and my co-workers. Yeah, I'm angry. Everybody would be angry if they got criticized in front of their boss and co-workers. Yeah. But actually, if we stop and look, behind that anger, there's the thought of, I'm special. Somebody else pointed out my mistake. I don't like other people pointing out my mistakes. I want to hide my mistakes, because if other people know what my mistakes are, I won't get the promotion. They won't respect me. They won't like me. They will harm me. So I need to protect my reputation. And I do that by getting angry at that person and letting them know that they overstepped the boundaries and they should not point out my faults in public. Even if I have that fault, they need to pretend I don't and keep their mouth closed. So that there's this whole process behind the anger. Yeah, this whole story, all these thoughts, and they're what makes the anger come up. Not that the anger comes out of nowhere. Okay? We're usually so familiar with these kind of stories that they just flash through our mind and then we're angry. We don't even realize how the anger is getting created. Yeah? Unless you really stop and watch. And then you can see, oh, the anger, you know, there was a moment without anger, then there was a little bit. Then it got bigger, then it got bigger, then it got bigger, then I'm furious. Yeah. There was a process, there's a lot of thoughts behind it. Whereas, if we practice the thought training, when somebody points out our faults in public, then we train our mind to think. Yeah. I'm always saying that I want to improve myself. Here's somebody telling me what I can do to improve myself. This is good. This is going according to my wishes. This is giving me information that will enable me to improve myself. Or you think, why is this person saying this to me, you know, in a way that's offensive to me? It's because of my previously created karma, how I've spoken to other living beings in the past. And then you think of all the times that we've spoken meanly to other people and pointed out their faults in public and embarrassed them or humiliated them. And I don't know about you, but either in my mind or with my mouth, almost every day I criticize at least one person, if not many. But every day I don't get criticized by other people. So it's kind of unbalanced. Yeah, I dish out the criticism and hurt more people than they criticize and hurt me. So the times when they do criticize and hurt me, why am I so upset when I've created the cause through my own anger to be the object that they get angry at? Why do I get upset with them when it's the result of my own anger? The result of my karma. If I don't like this result, then I have to start acting differently. So there's no reason to be mad at this other person. And there's a big reason for me to start to change. Okay? So if you meditate like this and practice these different ways of thinking, and in your meditation, imagine situations that either have happened to you in the past or that you think might happen to you in the future, and you practice thinking in this new way, in that situation, and you do this in your meditation, then you're creating a new mental habit, and you're really starting to transform your mind. And that will make it so that the anger doesn't pop up so quickly, and when the anger starts, you can catch it and then bring your mind back to this new way of thinking that you've done so much that you're very familiar with it and it's really changed your mind.
I think about this with the avocado is, I think it's very interesting. It's almost like sometimes you can feel you have a devil on one side and an angel on one side.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes they're just fighting and like, this is right, this is wrong, and you can argue it's this way and that way, and you can get you all confused.
Oh, yeah.
So,
like Donald Duck, he has this. And I often point this and remember.
Yeah.
Because it is really true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they have to make friends in a way, and it's not like, because I think also, like, Pema Chodron, she speaks very much about this, like fundamentalism. Sometimes there's like you think about they're the fundamentalists, maybe like some terrorist or something, and then you can go and march for them, and then you're also a fundamentalist, and it just keeps on going forever.
So
we need to have some peace of
mind, and it's the function of ignorance and doubt to keep us spinning and worrying all the time, because we're trying to eke out the most happiness from every small situation. And we're so afraid of making a choice that may not bring us the most happiness that we sit and ruminate and get all tangled up trying to make a decision. And in that way, we cause ourselves much more unhappiness and misery than choosing something and doing it.
It's like you cannot become completely sure. It's like
there
was some doubt.
Right. And we drive ourselves crazy.
I don't think it's always about self-centeredness, because for the environment, I also think there's just a lot of things that are simply unclear. It's not really about, in that case, if you don't know if it's better to buy an avocado or a tomato, it's not about you.
Well, except you also have to evaluate how big of a decision is. You know, am I going to spend 10 minutes of my precious human life worrying about, is it better to buy an avocado or a tomato? Or am I going to go to, on the internet and spend a half an hour surfing the internet researching avocados and tomatoes? Am I going to do that? Or am I going to do something that will really enhance the quality of my mind? Okay, you know, read a Dharma book, do some meditation, do some purification practice. Okay, so we can, you know, we can keep ourselves spinning over all sorts of stuff. And the thing is, we never have enough information to make a decision. Yeah? As soon as we get in this ruminating, confused mind, we never have enough information, because we read this on one website, but we want to read another website to see if it agrees, you know? Or we could go here, or we could go there, we could do this, so we research this, we research that, we research the other thing. But, you know, we're just reading somebody's website. We don't really know if that's telling the truth. We don't have all the information. Maybe we better go out and meet people who have done these different things, or, you know, have more information. And, you know, our whole life gets consumed with them.
Yeah, but then do we just give up working for the environment just because we don't have enough information? I say you never have enough information to.
I think that was why I was asking about, because about the emotion, because I think when we feel with our emotions, then we have some truth, because then we can like I can feel I have a lot of greed now, like I can like I just want chocolate, or like, because I think there's like it's very truthful. I know this. I don't need to ask anyone else. And I think, for example, if we are trying to change our patterns, I think especially like our emotions, like the kind of the start of the whole samsaric wheel, like kind of what is, we have a lot of wisdom already. And if we are trying to look for the wisdom elsewhere all the time, we can see consequences. But I think what Buddha Sakyamuni was, when he was like looking in this Rice Seedling Sutra, that he was actually kind of seeing how that how the like from his own, like how it all started, like very, very, when we go back, we go back, we go back, we go back, because then we have some wisdom. And I think this like this feeling, like feeling I want to smoke cigarettes, or I want this, like this feeling. So because looking at the consequences and seeing what's happening and seeing where it's going, but this kind of feeling, staying with this, this is very truthful. I think
it's urge. Truthful to say urge. I'm craving chocolate and I want to smoke a cigarette. That's truthful.
Maybe it's the wrong word, but it's like it's
not
there.
Truthful. That's BS. Excuse my French.
No, but it's
that's
like,
garbage.
Seeing what is, like for example, I'm furious. Yeah. So it's like.
So you see what it is, but does that mean that you want to stay that way?
No, but kind of penetrating. It's not letting it disturb you, like, or like just like a horse carrying you away.
Yeah. So
that's the point.
That's one technique to use to just watch it. Yeah. But it, with some of those things, it takes a lot to sit there and watch it, because our mind is actively telling us why we should follow it. So I think it's very helpful to know the different antidotes to apply to these emotions, so we can really retrain our way of thinking.
Because I mean, maybe we don't always know if it's tomato or avocado. So, but we know our feeling, like for example, this is not like, so it's like an addiction or something. And so maybe that's the way to start, instead of...
There's many different ways to do it. So people, we learn many different antidotes to the afflictions, and then you use the ones that work best for you. Yeah. But back to your question, you know, does that mean we just do nothing for the environment? No, of course not. We do what we can. Yeah. But we also have to assess how we spend our time, because any small thing can, if we're not wise, can just consume all of our time. Because you know how it is, as soon as you go on the internet, and you, one website, and then it links to another, and links to another, and then you've been online 4 hours. Yeah. Your meditation practice, you're too tired to do it. Yeah. You missed Dharma class because you were online researching tomatoes. You know, it's like we... yeah. We have to have some wisdom about this, okay? Okay. Is there more points about the environment that you want to bring up?
Okay. Well, I'm not so good in English, but I'll try.
Okay.
But sometimes I think to be kind to others, it's about to remove my pictures of what others are and see them as my pictures and remove them. And then I think people are so nice and kind of like, okay, they are so nice, and it's my own picture that makes them something else.
Exactly. You know, when we look back and trace, let's say, the, you know, where our anger or our jealousy or whatever came from, as we really research in our own mind, we see that we have painted a picture that we projected on the other person. And then we think that person is the picture we've painted on them.
I train in my dreams, because when I meet when I meet other people in my dreams, mm-hmm. I remove them, say, you are just me, and I don't want you here. And then they go, and when I train my mind, it comes to real life when I awake. Then I discover that in reality we have so many pictures, and some of them are creating anger, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's not anger, it's very difficult to. Sometimes I push my foot in the ground because I'm angry, but what creates that anger? And sometimes I find something in me, and it's not the other person. They are so kind and peaceful, so it's my
own. That's exactly it, you know? Because when you were referring in the Vaisiddhi Sutra, referring back to where do things start, they start with ignorance. And it's an ignorance that projects a way of existing onto people and phenomena that is incorrect. And because we've projected this false way of existence onto everything, thinking everything is an objective reality, then our own mind adds to all of that, and it's objectively good, it's objectively bad, this person is from their side like this, that person from their side is like that, and then it's a mental factor called distorted attention that projects those things, and then we believe what we've projected. And so realizing it's our projection, taking that back is quite good. There's still a person there, don't try and walk through them or something. There's still a person there, but it's, that person you're seeing isn't that horrible monster that our mind has made them out to be. Or isn't that fantastic, like, person that's going to bring us everlasting happiness. They're not that either. So when we see that, those kinds of things, then our mind can be steady, not so up and down. I like, I don't like, I don't want, but study. Also relating to the environment, I think we need a lot of courage, as individuals to change our own behavior, but a lot of courage also to live in a world where not everybody is paying the attention to the environment that we think they should pay to it. But you know what? If it's not the environment, it's something else, and other people aren't doing that, what we think they should do. Okay? So we come across born-again environmentalists who all they can talk to you about is how you should change your behavior about the environment. You encounter born-again vegetarians. All they want to talk to you about is how you should be a vegetarian. Born-again vegans. at the, let me talk about born again vegans for a moment. Because at the Abbey, we are vegetarian, okay, but we are not vegan. We do not eat fertilized eggs, okay, but we do have dairy products. And there was one man who came one time to see us. He was very upset because we were having dairy and it wasn't free from free-range cows, or, you know, we had unfertilized eggs, but the chickens were still in a coop. And he thought that that was really wrong and that we should have free-range, you know, products from free-range animals. And I explained to him that as renunciates, we depend on other people to give us food. And so some people may call and say, what do you need? But when we tell them what we need, we don't tell them things that are very expensive, things that they would not buy for themselves, because they want to offer to us food out of the kindness of their heart. And we have no business asking for free-range, you know, eggs and cow milk and things like that, because that to us doesn't seem ethical to do that. He would have none of my explanation. Yeah? What could I do? Then there's another person who every, you know, few weeks sends me an article about being vegan. And yeah? Very upset. I mean, his mind is so focused on Shvastiavi should be vegan. But, you know, I wonder what other, things he could pay attention to that might produce more benefit in the world. But he doesn't see it that way because he thinks being vegan is the thing that's really going to save the world. Yeah? So I just, I don't reply anymore to the email because I've already said what I have to say. Yeah. But, you know, the thing is for us to look out for the issues on which we become born-again whatevers or fundamentalist whatevers. Because actually all the fundamentalists have so much in common. They might have different causes, and they might fight each other over their different causes, but their way of thinking is so similar, you know? Really, so similar. And then, lo and behold, we become a fundamentalist, yeah? About whatever it is, yeah. Uh-huh.
If you want to be at war with the world, the easiest way is to make sure that your own point of view is always put forward.
Yep.
And I know that the hard way, because I'm married to a man who likes hunting, and I'm a vegetarian, so I have to choose, will I keep my husband or will I take on the battle? And I know it's not worth taking on the battle. Mm-hmm. So if we want to keep it warm, we choose it ourselves.
Yeah. So maybe talking to him won't make a difference, but there may be other people that you can talk to. Yeah. Yeah, you have to make those choices sometimes, and it's difficult. Yeah. But, you know, as much as we try to change everybody and make them do and be and think what we want them to do and be and think, they just don't cooperate. But of course, they look at us and tell us what we should do and be and think. And we don't go along with that either. We tell them to mind their own business. Okay. Or we scream at them. Yeah. So it's a double bind there. Yeah. Our opinions, our advice are right. and other people's, they're doing too much, they're interfering.
But I think also sometimes it's a question about communication, the right communication. I think like with the blood sausage, how mm-hmm. that came about and how it spoke to you. There's this story about, I think maybe he was Tibetan, and he was slaughtering goats all day long, and that's what he did. And then some friend came to him and said, please come into the city. So he put his knife down, and then he went to the city. And then when he came back, and then he wanted to continue, and then he couldn't find the knife, and then he saw that there was this sheep that was sitting on the knife because he didn't want to die. And then he was like really seeing, oh my God, they are just like me, they don't want to die, they want to live. And then he got it. So.
Yeah. There's hope. Yeah. There's hope. Yeah. But we have to live in a world where things are not going to change as quickly as we would like them to, you know? But we have, what other choice do we have, you know? We're living here, we do our best. The big thing is not to get discouraged, yeah? And because if we get discouraged, saying, you know, we're not restricting carbon emissions enough and this and this and this and this, then if we get discouraged, then we actually become part of the problem. Yeah, because we cease acting and doing even our little part. So it's very important when we are social activists or socially engaged to be able to keep an optimistic, happy mind so that we can keep working, you know, without having the expectation that things are suddenly going to change and everybody's gonna, the light bulb's gonna go on. Okay? Because how long did it take for the light bulb to go on for us? Yeah? None of us, I mean, when did we become aware of the environment? At birth? Yeah, when we were kids, you know, we just used whatever, threw it, wherever. Yeah, so it takes time. But the thing that's important is our motivation. Yeah, that we have that good motivation. And we keep doing it. If we have a good motivation and we keep going in that direction, then we're okay. Yeah. But if we have a good motivation and then we get angry because other people aren't having that same motivation, or we get discouraged because the change isn't happening fast enough, then we lose our good motivation. And the benefit that we're giving ceases. Yeah. So, and the karmic benefit also of having a good motivation ceases. Whereas, you know, if we're able to keep our good motivation, even if it's just in our mind, yeah, then already, you know, some change is happening. The mental cultivation is going on, and that will have an effect on us, slowly, and then on other people, slowly, too. Okay?
We kill every day, you know. Every day, when I start my car, if I at least 20 kilometers from here, when I drive in here, I kill a lot of animals. Mm-hmm. And I know it. But I not drive for kill them. But I know I kill an animal when I drive. Yeah. Many hundred mosquito or fly or something. Mm-hmm. We can. If we wear clothes, eat food, never mind what we're doing, we kill animals.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to have a good motivation. Yeah, knowing that, you know, we do our best to keep from killing, but others get harmed, but we maintain that motivation that, you know, that because of all of that, then I've got to work to benefit society in whatever way that's possible for me. Yeah. Because like you said, it's impossible to avoid all harm. So we do our best, but then we say, okay, you know, I still have this responsibility and obligation, yeah, to do what I can to benefit. Yeah. And not just say, well, you know, whatever. It's a lost cause. Also, by the way, there's a mantra that you can say and then blow on your feet or blow on the tires. And that helps any living beings that get squished. Yeah. Yeah?
But is it the same like you, when, I'm not vegetarian, sometimes I eat meat, but when I eat meat, I wish this animal get a better life next time.
Right.
And I can also wish, I don't know, it's the same wish when I drive my car on this animal, I can get a better life.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean at least that kind of thing. That, yeah. And not only may they have a better life, but in the future, in our future lives, because of my Dharma practice now, may my mind be richer in the Dharma, so that when I meet them in a future life, no matter what life, you know, forms they're in, maybe they'll be human beings, I'll be a human being, may I be able to teach them the Dharma. Yeah? So this life, you know, the driving and these bugs are getting killed, but in future lives, doing, you know, by virtue of my driving here, learning the Dharma, becoming a better person, creating good karma, approaching awakening, then when I meet the bugs in their future lives, where maybe they are a human being, may I be able to lead them on the Dharma path. Yeah, and think like that.
Thank you.
Yeah? Yeah, one of my teachers, well, all my teachers I see, they make connection with other living beings as much as they can. One of them, he came to Los Angeles many years ago, and we took him to the beach, and there were these sea urchins, you know, the kind of sea anemones, and if you stick something in, they close. So he would take his prayer beads and put them in, and the sea urchins would close around that and then open again. But that's how he was making contact and blessing those animals. Yeah. Another one of my teachers, when he's driving, he'll have you stop when there's a roadkill, and you get out and do mantras and blow on the animal. Yeah. So there's all these different ways to contact different living beings and create a karmic connection that can be useful. Okay. Anything else? We didn't finish all 8 verses, but I think we had some good learning and good discussion, maybe. Something that will provoke some thoughts and change in all of us in the future. So let's sit quietly now for a moment with our digestion meditation and think about what we heard and how we can put it into practice in our lives.